Some of the views expressed on the Mormon Channel are solely for the education and inspiration of our audience and may not represent the official position of the Church.
The desire to create is one of the deepest yearnings of the human soul. We each have an inherent wish to create something that did not exist before. The more you trust and rely upon the Spirit, the greater your capacity to create.
I'm Nancy Hansen, and this is Everything Creative. This program explores a wide range of creative ideas, talents, and experiences through interviews and group discussions. Welcome to Everything Creative. I'm Nancy Hansen. Thanks for joining us today on the program. We are here in Nashville, Tennessee, with performers Drew and Lacey Williams. For Drew and Lacey, it has always been about the music. Both were raised in musical families, and by the time they met in college, they had performed around the world. The couple started their life together in Utah, where they were both staples in the music scene. Drew played fiddle and mandolin with almost every artist in the state, while Lacey established herself as a songwriter and performer. They had the opportunity to share the stage with Leanne Rimes, Jody Messina, and Ryan Shoup and the Rubber Band. After spending time on various solo projects, the couple decided to make the move to Nashville and combine forces. Their bluegrass, jazz, and folk backgrounds allowed them to create a unique country sound. They began working on a project together with the help of producer Jason Deere. And the recently released EP shows that the duo has what it takes, and that for Drew and Lacey, it continues to be all about the music. Drew and Lacey Williams, thank you for being here today.
Oh, thanks for having us.
We're happy to be here.
Well, let's just get started with a little bit about each of you. Maybe Lacey, we'll start with you. Tell us about your background and growing up and your involvement in music.
Okay. I grew up the oldest of six, and we are all very musical. We all started on the piano at a young age and then took violin and fiddling, and it's been a huge part of our lives for each sibling. And it was probably when I was about 8 years old that my mom had me start to take fiddling lessons as opposed to violin. And we grew up in Japan, and when I moved back at the age of 13, then I started taking from my cousin, Janice Walter, who is now Janice Anderson, and she's a fiddler in Utah. And so all growing up, all through high school, then fiddling was kind of a big deal with our family. We went to a fiddling contest every year, and then I started taking mandolin and guitar from Mark Gesslison. And so by the time I got to BYU, then I joined the folk music program, and it was just kind of the next step, the natural thing to do.
So you've kept up with piano this whole time?
Yeah, and the whole time I was taking classical piano. And wow. In high school, there was a time, especially in high school, where I was really serious about studying classical piano. And when I got to BYU, I had to kind of decide, should I do the route where I go into, you know, piano performance, or should I do something else and be part of the folk program?
So that's what you decided to do?
Yeah, because the piano program is so intense, there's really nothing else you can do.
Drew, let's go to you.
Okay. Well, I'm the middle of four or five boys, middle of five boys. And it's hard when you're the middle child. So when I was five, we went to Burt Murdoch Music in Orem. And my mom says, all right, pick out an instrument. So I picked a violin and started the classical music, and I hated it. Won't lie about it. Didn't like it. So when we moved, my family moved to California, and they found, rather than doing classical music, my mom found a jazz musician.
But you stuck with it.
Yeah, I stuck with it from five, and we moved when I was eight. And we stuck with it just because that was the deal, you know. That was the way my mom rolled. But when we did get to California, then I started taking jazz. And I didn't really read music very well. And so jazz kind of just fell right into place, and I learned it all by ear. And so my teacher, Jim Hurley, he would put some charts out every lesson and play the guitar and then just kind of help me improvise and go through that, and that's what I did all the way up until college. And all my brothers play. I've got an older brother, Josh, who plays he plays keyboard, piano, and then my brother Marcus plays mandolin and fiddle, and then I play fiddle and mandolin guitar, and then Spencer plays violin and piano, and then Matthew plays guitar.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's a whole, so we have a good time when we get together.
But when growing up, did you form a little Williams Family band?
Yeah, we actually called ourselves the Williams Family Cloggers. Because we all clog.
There was clogging too.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, both his parents clogged. They met at BYU clogging.
Yeah.
That's quite an image.
Yeah. With the full outfits, you know, think 80s, 1980s. We had the white Levi's with the, you know, with the cowboy shirts. We all matched. It was certainly not the cool thing in high school. We did it nonetheless.
It paid off. So where did you perform with your family?
We performed all over. I think my first big trip as a Williams Family Clogger was in France. We went to France and
really?
Performed at a children's folkloric festival, which was phenomenal. In fact, we all have friends that we still, you know, write.
And keep in touch with from then?
Even from 1985. So, and then we played a lot around the Bay Area, around California.
And did you get paid? Was this a fun little family hobby? Or
It was, at times, it was the, we were the breadwinners.
Wow.
For the, some of our favorite experiences as a family is we went to San Francisco and danced on the street. We put our little hat out. We had our ghetto blaster, and we danced, and then we played fiddle music, and people threw money in the hats, and some people did, and some people didn't.
Wow.
And met a lot of really amazing folks doing that, that otherwise we would have never had that opportunity.
Yeah, and I'm sure those are little shaping experiences you don't realize that maybe helped you out later in life. You know, being able to have those little, I mean, who goes out on a street in San Francisco and dances and put a hat, you know?
Not a lot of family clogger folks out there on the streets of San Francisco. A lot of jugglers.
Yeah.
But not a lot of clogging families.
So when did you pick up guitar and mandolin?
I picked up the guitar right after my mission. I picked up a little bit of my mission. There was a family that we were teaching, and they play guitar, and so I kind of picked around on it.
Where'd you go on your mission?
Indiana.
Okay.
Yeah, Indianapolis, Indiana.
So you kind of taught yourself on guitar.
Self-taught guitar and mandolin.
Because mandolin's similar to fiddle.
Yeah, just a fretted fiddle.
Okay.
Basically.
So people can transition easily with those two instruments.
I guess.
Some people can. I never could. I can't. My right hand doesn't cooperate. But.
So let's talk about how you guys met.
Well, we were both going to BYU at the time. We were both in the folk program. And we got put together in a group by the director. I think there were five people in the group. That whole year, we practiced a couple times a week. And it was a fun group. I thought we were pretty good.
Well.
I played the fiddle. Drew was playing guitar. And
it was my first go at the guitar, so I don't know that we were that good.
Well,
but we had a good time.
I thought we were okay.
We had a good time.
But we weren't. We didn't start dating. We were friends, but we went through the semester and we parted ways. I went to BYU Hawaii for a semester, and Drew was.
I stayed at BYU.
Stayed at BYU, and so at the end of that next semester, when I got back, then we met up and we were like,
hi.
Single, yeah. And that's when we started dating. And Drew was just about to graduate, so he left pretty soon after to go to teach.
In Vegas,
his first teaching job. And that lasted for just a few months, because every weekend he would fly home and come to Utah.
To see you.
To see me. And then fly back.
I had no money, because I was spending it all on airline tickets. It was my first teaching job, so I had no money. And I would ride my... I had
a longboard,
skateboard.
Mm-hmm.
And so from my apartment, I would ride to McCarran Airport on my longboard, and I would stash my longboard in the bushes.
True.
And then I'd fly to... And this was like as soon as the bell rang on Friday. I was gone. And flew in on Friday night, and then took the last flight out of Salt Lake on Sunday.
That is the sweetest thing
I've
ever heard.
Isn't that cute? Except mm-hmm. one weekend, his longboard got stolen, so he had to walk home.
I had to walk home.
That was sad. But
what were you teaching?
Wood shop. So I built another longboard.
That makes it easy.
Yeah.
So you decided enough of that, and you moved back to Utah.
Yeah, I just, you know, I was basically living in Utah.
Yeah.
And just working in Vegas. So got a job teaching in Provo, so moved back.
And then we got married in March of that year.
The best story, though, I think, is that while I was in Vegas, a good buddy of mine invited me to go play with a bluegrass band in North Carolina. And so I had this grand idea that I was going to pay for Lacey to fly out to Nashville, and a good friend of mine who was a writer out here owned a publishing company. I talked to him, and he said we could stay with him. He'd show us around the town. I'd never been to Nashville at this point. And Lacey hadn't been to Nashville either. And so the week before we left for this trip, I went and bought a ring, and Lacey didn't know this.
And, no clue. We hadn't talked about it at all.
Really?
Yeah.
No. And so we flew in. I flew from Vegas. Lacey flew from Salt Lake, and I got there about 4 hours before Lacey did. And so so I called Lacey's dad on his, you know, on my cell phone, and I said, well, so here's the deal. I'm going to ask Lacey to marry me. Is that okay? And Dennis says, well, I'm going to have to get back to you.
Oh, no, he didn't.
Yeah.
And then he forgot.
Then he didn't call me back.
He went and mowed the lawn, and then finally my mom's like, hey, did you ever call Drew back? And he's like, oh, yeah, I better do that. So Drew is sitting in the airport.
Yeah.
Nashville airport. And it was like right before Lacey landed, he called me. He said, well, have you talked to Lacey yet? And I said, no. And he said, okay, well, I guess that might be the only way with Lacey, so good luck with that. So this whole time, you know, I've got this ring in my pocket, and we do the Nashville tour, and, you know, Josh King takes us around, and he kind of takes us through his publishing company and shows us how it works and introduces us to writers and kind of tells us all about that whole thing, which was new. That was all new to
us.
Yeah,
we didn't know anything about it.
And then we drove with him. We drove out to North Carolina to play this bluegrass, and it was up in Fontana. So it's like up in the Smoky Mountains. It's beautiful. It's August, and, you know,
it was pretty.
The leaves are changing. I mean, it's just a beautiful place. So I think we get up there on Friday, and on Friday night, I asked Lacey, you know, I did the whole, will you marry me? And she said no. She said no.
Well, you should have asked me first.
So you want to talk about an awkward weekend.
Whoa.
Yeah. And then my buddy, the friend who invited us, Jeff, good friend of mine, he got some sparkling cider and, you know what I mean, and some flowers. And so I walked out, and of course I'm just crestfallen, and I walk out, and I was like, no, no, you can't do this. She said, no. So they had to put it all away.
That was awful.
So, how'd it work out, Lacey?
Well, I wasn't ready. So we somehow, I don't know, survived that weekend. And then, anyway, when I got back, then we talked about it, and I said, I do want to marry you. I just need time. And so it was, I think, in December, a few months later, that we got engaged.
And you've been married how long?
Almost 7 years.
Yeah. 7 years. And you have some kids.
Yeah, we have two daughters. Emerson is 3 and Holland is 1. And
great.
They're great.
So did you finish school mm-hmm. at BYU in what?
I did a double major. I graduated in history teaching as well as music media. Were my 2 degrees.
Okay, and then did you teach? Did you work
I taught,
in Provo?
I taught at Payson Middle School.
Okay.
And I taught there for a year, and then we moved here, and I taught here for a few years.
So you both are living and working in the Provo area, mm-hmm. and you decide to pack it up and move to Nashville. How did that decision work out? What brought you to that?
Well, we were playing a lot of music in Utah, and I was playing with Ryan Tilby and Sam Payne and Peter Breinholt, and pretty busy. We just wanted to try our hand in the music business. You know, that was such a focus of our life at the time. We didn't have any kids, mm-hmm. and we just thought, okay, let's do this.
You're both teaching and playing music a lot. And Lacey, you were mm-hmm. pretty active in...
Yeah, yeah. We both were performing all the time.
Yeah, so. Almost every weekend, you know, and throughout the week.
So you said, let's do it.
Yeah. And part of that process was that I got accepted into Belmont to get an MBA in music business.
Okay.
And so that was kind of the catalyst, I think, that got us here.
Yeah.
We had a plan.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't follow it, but we had it.
So you packed it up. You came out uh-huh. to Nashville. Did you have a place to stay?
Yeah. Well, David Tolk,
David Tolk is a local musician
yeah,
in the Salt Lake area.
Right.
Pianist.
Right. And I knew him with playing, you know, through playing with, Pete and, his parents live in just south of Nashville mm-hmm. and his sister and husband mm-hmm. and family. And so we actually, ended up staying at David's parents' place for some time.
When you first
for
came
a few
out.
Months,
yeah.
actually.
Yeah, which was great. We
yeah,
loved
they
it.
They were great.
They're like our parents away from home.
And we both found jobs teaching. And I got a job teaching here in Nashville downtown. And when they hired me, I said, do you have anything for my husband? And they said, yeah, actually we do. And they gave him a job not teaching, but as a dean of students there. And he had background working
juvenile court
mm-hmm. in Utah. So they gave him this job as dean of students at the school. So we both started working at the same high school. Yeah. And then we found a house and we bought a house out here. And
okay. So what really, had you started school?
One of the classes was online.
Okay.
And it was a stats class, and they sent me the packet to do, and I opened the packet up, and I said, there's no way. I'm not doing this. I don't, no way. And by that time, we had been here for a few months and had talked to a lot of folks in the business and found out that that's just not what I didn't want to manage another band.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what I wanted to do. And so after I got that packet, I dropped out.
You said, never mind.
Yeah.
Thanks, but no thanks.
I'm talking to Drew and Lacey Williams, musicians and songwriters working and living here in Nashville. You're listening to Everything Creative on the Mormon Channel. So talk about what your expectations kind of were as far as playing music here and getting into the music scene and how you started about that.
Well, we knew that we wanted to do something together when we came out here. We'd been playing separately in Utah, and we thought, well, let's come out here and do something together. And so, you know, we weren't sure if we wanted to be musicians for separate bands. We got a few calls to play fiddle. Both Drew and I started playing fiddle for some other bands.
You gotta tell them about Texas.
And the first show I did was awful. I had to drive, and it's just pretty par for the course out here. I had to drive all the way to Texas in a van. It was me and six
guys
who were awful.
Lacey.
So disgusting. So, and I, at the time, I was just a few weeks pregnant. I was so sick. And so.
But you're willing to do this. You're
yeah,
like, okay,
this is what we need to do. So I drove to Texas, and it was horrible.
And your van
the
broke
whole
down.
Thing. The van broke down, and I was throwing up on the road, and it was just awful. And so after I got back from that, we thought, that's not what we thought. But that's kind of what you have to do if you want to, mm-hmm. you know, you play for them and then somebody else will call you. And Drew got, we kind of were working our way up the ladder, and we decided that's not what we wanted to do. So we were able to contact Jason Deere, who is a producer here in Nashville, and talk to him. And this is over the course of...
About a year.
And Jason is a member of the church.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we knew him through people that we knew here, and we met him, and he produced an EP that we did of songs that were Drew and I. And so it took a while to get that going and to get that finished, but then we were able to, we had a product we were really proud of, and an EP that had four songs that we chose, that we loved, that kind of represented where we were in Nashville at the time.
And when? How long has that been out?
About a year and a half now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Why don't we talk about what an EP is for those who may not know? What does EP mean?
Extended play is what it really means.
Right.
But it's just like a little demo.
It's kind of just a 4 or 5 song, yeah. Maybe.
Demos. And it's more than a demo. They're fully produced songs, but
it's not a full length.
It's not a full length album. And a lot of artists are transitioning to these just because the way the digital world is, you don't necessarily need a full album all the time because people will generally go on iTunes and buy 1 or 2 or 3 mm-hmm. songs instead of purchasing a whole album at a music store. So, you know, a lot of artists are switching to this where they make shorter.
Mm-hmm.
And they call them EPs.
So you're continuing to play music, though, mm-hmm. all this time and playing out with different bands and different venues and sharing your music and playing together. What's that like to be able to play and write and create and perform together as a husband and wife couple?
Well, I think it's interesting because the one thing that we've learned while we've been in Nashville is that we love music and we always want music to be a part of our life. And not only because of the experiences that we've had, but because, you know, experiences that we go through as we're creating. It's, you know, it's a very creative process for us. And it's the funnest thing that we do as a couple, but it's probably one of the hardest things that we do.
Yeah.
Because we're both very, you know, we just have our way, you know, like a creative style. And so, and that's been the really neat thing is to be immersed in a town that is so music-centered that we can continue to create. And we kind of, we'd still love to, you know, as a couple and as a family to go tour and, you know, and play big venues. I mean, I think, you know, that's what got us to Nashville in the first place.
Sure.
But at right now, you know, with a young family, then we play a lot on weekends and we play because we love playing. We don't, mm-hmm. we're not doing it to put food on the table.
Yeah. And that's helped relieve, you know, kind of release some of the tension and the stress so that we enjoy it more.
Yeah. And I think that's so important to point out and to realize,
yeah.
you know, that it's good to have something else to fall back on.
Right. Yeah. Otherwise, I think it would turn into less of something we love and more of something that...
Work.
Yeah, something that we had to do to feed our family. Mm-hmm. So... And we try to make it a priority, you know, to go to shows and to spend time. And it's not easy. It's hard with the girls. And we found a good babysitter here, and we use her all the time. And there are a lot of mornings that come early because we've been out, you know, performing or we've gone to see somebody. But I think it's important to us. And so we've tried to make it a priority.
And we've also, I feel like we've been in town. And we've met some really phenomenal players, and there's kind of this cohort of musicians in Nashville that stay in Nashville. They don't tour, and so we've have a lot of good friends and musicians in town that do that, and so I've been able to play with some phenomenal musicians just in local, you know, local gigs,
mm-hmm.
Small venues, big venues. But you know, just being able to be around this, you know, these amazing musicians, it's just been phenomenal for us, you know, and not have to worry about, man, I hope this gig pays really well. You know, we just go and play it, have a good time.
Yeah. We'd love to hear some music. If you want to play us something.
Okay.
Hear what you do. Let's do it. All right. What are you going to play for us?
Well, it's a song called Gypsy, and we just, Lacey, I should say, just finished it up last night, so we're going to try it on y'all.
It's a song I wrote, and I usually finish writing songs, and then I'll come to Drew and have him help me kind of polish them up music-wise. He'll always figure out something cool on the guitar, and I really appreciate his advice as far as... I don't know, that word doesn't sound good, or this part doesn't sound right. So, by finish it, I mean...
I make a good critic.
I finish it, I mean, I played it for Drew, and he helped me get it ready to perform. I was born with feet so heavy.
gypsy.
Drew and Lacey Williams, their new song, Gypsy. That's great.
Thanks.
So, Lacey, do you write that on guitar?
Piano? I wrote that on keyboard. Okay. Yeah. And then I had Drew
work up
a guitar part.
Guitar part for it. That's great. So that's new. That's fun.
Yeah, it's really fun.
How often do you write?
I make her write two songs a week.
I try to write a lot. It doesn't happen, but I try. So I write a lot, mostly by myself, and then there have been a couple people here in town that I've found that I really enjoy co-writing with, and so I'll write with them.
Can we talk about that, co-writing, for a minute? It seems like in Nashville especially, that's kind of a big thing.
It's all about the co-write, you know? Yeah, it is. And that kind of took a while for me to get used to, and I'm still getting used to it. It seems like every time I come home from a co-writing session, I'm either really excited or really discouraged. And I've come to discover that it's not something you can just do where you can find anybody and be successful. And it's the same for most writers. They'll find somebody that they work really well with together, and then they'll continue to go back to them over and over. And a lot of times people will say, oh, I think you'd work well with so-and-so, and it's not true. You have to really find people that you share the same ideas with creatively and that you feel comfortable with, and sometimes it takes a while to develop that relationship.
Yeah, because it's a pretty vulnerable thing.
Writing a song, for me anyways, and I'm no songwriter, but writing a song, it's an intimate process. Mm-hmm. It's a very personal thing. And so being able to open up to somebody else to write that song, you can't do that with just anybody, I don't think.
Yeah. So I've been lucky to find a few people that I seem to work really well with together. we work well together, and I've just kind of gone with that. I don't, yeah. And tried to write with them as much as possible. And
what do you appreciate about a co-writer when you come to a session? What is it that you're like, okay, that's what I need?
Usually in the past, I've appreciated people that I know and feel comfortable with outside of that songwriting realm. So, I mean, there's been a few times where I've gone in cold, but we've been able to make in a connection quickly about something. You know, we can talk about our families together, or we can talk about other things music-wise together and make a connection, and then we feel comfortable enough writing a song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, usually it just involves...
just kind of getting to know them, feeling comfortable.
Yeah, getting to know them and feeling comfortable.
What do you come to a co-write with? Do you bring ideas?
Yeah, you bring ideas. A lot of times you'll bring a start to a song, or they'll bring a start and you help each other finish it, or you'll come with a melody or a guitar chord pattern.
What if you have this song that you love that you've started and you bring it to this co-write and then it goes a different direction than you wanted it to, or it goes bad?
Yeah, that's happened before. Well, and so some songs I haven't ever shared because
I'm afraid of that.
Or I'm waiting for the right person. Like, oh, maybe this person will actually take it where I wanted to go.
So, because wherever that goes becomes that song and that co-write with that person,
right.
And you can't really start over.
And then it's that kind of that idea taken. And mm-hmm. So I've had to be careful. And there are a few songs that I haven't found the right person yet, I feel like.
Yeah.
Not that they're not great co-writers, but just for that particular idea, I feel like I want a specific person to help that go where it needs
to go.
It's
such an interesting process.
I know, it really is. But here in Nashville, nobody writes songs by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So while it wasn't my first choice of how to do it, it's something I've had to kind of adapt to.
Yeah, for sure. So what would be your hope and dream and wish for you here in Nashville and for your music?
I still love playing my songs out. And so every chance I get, then I try to play songs I've written or songs that Drew and I have worked up. And I think that would always be my goal. I would never want to just, write songs and send them out and never hear them perform or never perform them myself.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I think I would like to have some kind of publishing deal where I was able to be set up with certain songwriters and try that out for a while and see how
great.
It goes. I don't know. Yeah.
Sure. And what about you, Drew? So you have these expectations when you moved out here and things kind of changed when you got here, like, oh, I know you've had the opportunity or offers to play with some, major touring bands. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, I think that there might be one night that I had this epiphany, and Lacey was pregnant with our first kiddo, and I was the dean of students. So basically, the dean of students was the disciplinarian for high school freshmen.
Okay.
And I was learning a lot in that role. I came home one day and I just thought, there's no way that I will be able to support my wife and little kid on the way as a musician, right? I just don't see it happen. And it was just like this epiphany. And so that week I applied to a local university and to get a master's in educational leadership, and got into that school and finished that degree and was able to become an assistant principal. And it's been a wonderful experience, this process. And then got into a doctorate program at a local university here in educational leadership. And so
now, who would think when you're back, living in Utah and you're thinking, we're going to go to Nashville, that you
right.
would end up here 2 kids later in a doctoral program.
Right.
You know?
Never would I have thought that. And interestingly enough, I mean, it is an interesting thing. Obviously, the Lord had his hand in this whole process, and maybe the music was what got us here,
mm-hmm.
and then and some other things were put into place that kind of got us to this point. But through this process, and you don't really tie in music to educational leadership, whether a master's degree or a doctorate degree,
But I've had the opportunity to play and meet people in the music industry and play for people who I never would have had that opportunity had I not gone through those programs.
Right.
And so it's just interesting that as we kind of go through this process that we understand that there's a bigger purpose.
And it's interesting to see those pivoting moments where you realize it wasn't really you. When that very first phone call, when I accepted that job here, and I still wonder how come I said, do you have a position for my husband? What a funny thing to say when you accept a job, but, and yet they so readily had something where he was, it would put him on the track to be an administrator. And then it's, and that role is something he fits so well.
I love it.
You know, he loves it, and he's with kids, and he gets to act like a kid all the time.
It's perfect for me.
Last year, he rappelled off the ceiling during a pep rally, dressed in the Wildcat suit. He called
it was
me
awesome.
And he's like, "This was the best day ever.
This is work."
I know. I'm getting paid for this. Here's a great example. Our school that I'm at now, it has a guitar program, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And they started this last week a bluegrass unit. And the teacher, she knows a little bit about bluegrass, but not a ton. And so in talking with her, I asked her if it would be okay if I brought my instruments in. And it was such a phenomenal way to build relationships with
sure.
students. Because I played, you know, a little guitar, a little mandolin, a little fiddle. And the cutest question I got asked, a young girl said to me, she said, "Mr. Williams, you're so talented. Why are you an assistant principal at Cane Ridge High School?" And that's an easy answer for me. It's because I love doing it. And it also allows me to be able to share music with, you know, people who otherwise would have never, ever listened. You know, it's the inner city school, and never would have listened to a Bill Monroe song.
Yep.
And thought it was cool.
Yeah, I bet they love you. That's so cool.
Or think I'm a total nerd. I don't know.
That's great.
You know, this summer I got asked to go on tour, you know, with an up-and-coming artist. And it was just one of those moments that you have to really think what's important. And I've always, no matter what decision we've ever made, we've always had the opportunity to keep playing music. You know, weekends.
Lazy. It's not like you do this or you're
right,
done.
Right. Yeah. We're blessed that we always have. I can't remember the last time we haven't had a gig on the horizon. You know, we always have a show coming up.
Yeah.
And so.
It's great. So, and Drew, maybe you would have thought before you moved out here, wow, wouldn't that be cool if I could get a gig with the touring band?
Oh, yeah.
You
know? That was like the goal.
Yeah. Now you have this offer and you're like, yeah, you know what? That's not really going to work for me and my family.
Right.
Funny how that changes.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I can't imagine leaving Emmy and Holland for 3 months. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, and Lace.
And me.
And Lace. But, you know, I mean, that's one of the greatest things is when Holland, Emmy, she'll come in and ask us to play. You know, she knows all of Lacey's songs, all the ones she's working on.
Yeah.
Even if they're not finished yet, she'll sing them in the car and want us to play for her, you know, and that's better
cute.
Than
yeah.
playing
Lucky
in front
girls.
Of 30,000 folks.
You think?
I think so.
Me too. Well, can
so.
We hear something else?
Yeah. What do you want to play, Lace?
Should we do Cold Sassy?
Yeah. Yeah, tell them about that.
It's called Cold Sassy, and it's about the South. And I actually wrote it based on the book Cold Sassy Tree mm-hmm. that I had just finished. So, yeah.
So here it is.
Missing you really hurt.
I join you there. But deep down I know it'll be us that'll go, yeah, 'cause we were the ones that never really cared. And I wanna go back to old Sassy. Yeah, it's down south.
Drew and Lacey Williams with Cold Sassy. I love it. That's great. Let's talk about being a member of the church and living out here in Nashville. I got to go to church with you last Sunday, which was great. And Lacey, you are the chorister, primary chorister.
Primary, yeah.
And I was really impressed. I talked about this in another interview, at how great your primary was.
Oh, that's sweet.
So you're doing a great job with them. I don't know if it's just these Nashville kids that belt it out, or if
they love Miss Lacey.
Sister Williams.
In Nash, in the South, it's Miss Lacey. And
yeah, it's fun. I have a good time. I've been doing it for a while now, so I know the kids, and we have a really good time.
Yeah, they're great. You're doing a good job. Drew, what have been some of the callings you've held since you've been here?
I was the young men's president when I first got out here, and it
wow.
was with a new baby and the master's program,
yeah.
and then I lucked out and got called into the primary after that. So I've been in the primary now for 3 years.
What do you teach?
The 8-year-olds.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
And he is Brother Drew.
I am Brother Drew, because I'm Mr. Williams all week.
Yeah.
You know, and so they call me Brother Drew, and they think it's really cool because they get to call me Brother Drew. But they're great kids. I love my calling.
And you've been in the same ward?
Yeah, since you've been out here. Mm-hmm. We've been in the same, and we love it. We love it. It's kept us where we are because we love it.
Because you want to stay
ward.
In that
yeah.
ward. Yeah. Are you, is this your first experience living outside of Utah? Well, no, you grew up in Japan.
California.
Mission, California. Yeah, so no, you wouldn't. What is it like here? Are there as many activities and opportunities to get together? Do you kind of cherish those more?
Well,
you're living in
you
Utah?
Well, you definitely rely, I feel, on people in your ward more. At least I do, because my family isn't here.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
They become your family.
Yeah. And all of our closest friends here are people that are from our ward, and we've met that way.
Yeah. So. How have your testimonies grown since you've been here? And do you feel like this has kind of been a strengthening experience for you as a couple and in the gospel?
Yeah, I'll speak to that. I think that the big part is that, you know, you can't... we live in the Bible Belt.
Mm-hmm.
And so every day, you know, a lot of the people I work with, and they want to know about, you know, why are you a member? Why, you know, tell me about being a Mormon. Tell me about being LDS. And so it has allowed me the opportunity to be a missionary, you know, just to express... how I feel about the Savior, and giving me the opportunity to kind of rely on each other, Lace and I, mm-hmm. and to develop our testimony as a family, you know, not only individually, but I think it's important that we've grown our testimony as a family. And so that's been a great process for us. You know, I mean, it's been a challenge at times, but it's been a really, really great process, and certainly brought us closer as a couple and closer to the Savior.
Yeah, you have these experiences together where you leave home and family and comfort zone, and suddenly it's just the two of you,
right?
And God, and you want doors to be open, and you want to be led and guided, and yeah. opportunities like that can be strengthening.
And there have been times where it's been hard, but we've never questioned whether it was a good idea to move or a good idea, you know, to be here. And I think that's always been something that we've felt like has been guided. And then over time, you know, it's, oh, that makes sense. Oh, this makes sense.
I certainly have a greater understanding of the word faith, because at times we have, you know, for instance, with this doctorate program, and it was a pretty big commitment, and there had to be some faith, you know, just to say, okay, we feel that this is right, and so we're gonna go for it. And when we make that step, when we say we're going to go for it, then all of a sudden these doors are opened, and that's been a huge thing, you know, to be able to say, okay, we're going to just let go a little bit and trust.
Mm-hmm. Move forward. And
yeah.
That's good. Do you see yourselves here for the long haul?
For a while, I think.
Yeah. And we love Nashville. Nashville's such a great place because it's there are so many people from all over, not only just the United States, but all over the world. I mean, it is a music mecca. Mm-hmm. And so we love it for that reason. We are meeting these great people all the time that, you know, that we wouldn't have the opportunity to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I see ourselves here for a little while.
Are you still kind of as maybe starstruck as you were when you first came out here?
I don't know. I don't know how starstruck we were ever. We haven't been. I mean, of course, there's definitely people where we're like, oh, we want to meet them, but...
I'd like to meet Keith Urban.
Me too.
I'm with you there.
But, yeah, well, we definitely have a better sense of how it all works. And so when people say, oh, here's so-and-so, and we're like, well, we really know how that works behind, yeah. you know, what's really behind that artist, what got them there. We have a little bit of a better, we definitely don't understand it all, but we have a better understanding of how the town works.
The coolest part for me is, like, my good friend Jeff, who I talked a little bit about earlier, he clogs on the Opry. And so when he comes into town, then I kind of tag along and get to go backstage. In one opportunity, Brad Paisley was there, and after Brad sang, you know, he came backstage, and it was so. And I'm not kind of the starstruck. Hey, let me get your autograph. I need a picture. I'm more interested in, you know, what kind of guitar are you playing? What's the pickup that you use? That's kind of my so. It was just neat to be able to talk to somebody and to know that, yeah, they play in front of 50,000 folks on a regular basis, but they're still, you know, he talked about West Virginia, and he was really interested in how WVU was doing in football, 'cause they were playing that night. And so, you know, his first question to Jeff, who's from West Virginia, is who won the game? And it's just neat to see that they're real people.
Yeah.
Nice folks that love what they do, so that part of it is cool.
Yeah. Well, it's been so great having you on the program. Thanks for taking time to come out and meet with us. We miss you back in Utah. Drew and Lacey actually are pretty good friends of mine, and we've played lots of music together in the past. And so it's fun to come out here and visit you and see what your life is like. Can we leave with one more song? Will that work?
Yeah.
Let's
do it.
So this is a tune that I wrote about my grandpa Williams, and I'd mentioned that I had taught woodshop, and Grandpa Williams is the reason that I got into that. And he passed away, man, about 5 years ago now. So it's called Coming Home. Well, all things considered, I think I'm doing fine. Before what just happened, my life changed on a dime. We'll end in time. I'm coming home, whoa. On a train that's bound for glory, I'm coming home, whoa. With a book that holds a story, I'm coming home, whoa. I look out the windows
it all looks the same. And I am reminded the laughs on Cherry Lane, and I'm back again. I'm coming home, whoa, on a train that's bound for glory. I'm coming home, whoa, with the book that holds a story. I'm coming home, whoa. Well, he is their lion in his clothes of white, and she stands there crying, holding his hand so tight, a love's perfect sight. He's going home, whoa, on a train that's bound for glory. He's going home, whoa, with a book that holds a story. He's going home, whoa, he's going home, whoa, he's going home, whoa.
Drew and Lacey Williams, thanks so much again for joining me today. Appreciate
it. Thank you, Nancy.
It. You've been listening to Everything Creative, a program of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm Nancy Hansen for the Mormon Channel. To see pictures and video of today's episode, visit our website at mormonchannel.org.